I'm Karen Harkless. You're listening to It's All About Food. Thanks for joining me today. I am home in New York in Forest Hills. It's a rainy May day. I've heard this is like the most rain in May in a very long time here in New York. And I thought that because it was raining, we wouldn't be having construction on the exterior of our building. I don't know how many of you are aware of this local law in New York City, but all of the buildings, I think they have to be over a certain height. Every 5 or 10 years, they check the entire exterior, and that requires putting platforms up that rise up to the height of the building. And they check for loose bricks and all kinds of things to make sure pieces don't fall on people on the ground below. It's kind of a cool thing, but when they finally work on your building, it's terrible. And my terrace has been boarded up now for 2 months, and the noise is terrible. And the noise is getting a little more quiet because they're moving around to other parts of the building, but there's still a little hum. So I hear at the station they can't hear it. That's great. I can. But let's just put that aside. Anyway, I want to say I'm grateful for the things that go on in this great city, the greatest city in the world, and especially laws and things that protect people. And I hope this particular one is a good one. Let's move on and talk about my favorite subject, food. I want to bring on my guest, Tony Akimoto. And I'm sorry, that's Akimoto. And Tony is the founder of Plant Based on a Budget, the popular website, food blog, and meal plan that shows you how to save dough by eating veggies. She's also the author of Plant Based on a Budget, Super Easy Vegan Slow Cooker Cookbook, and the co-author of the Friendly Vegan Cookbook. Plant Based on a Budget has been featured in Reader's Digest, U.S. News and World Report, and more. And Tony's also a regular presence on the Fox affiliate in Sacramento, where she teaches viewers how to break their meat habit without breaking their budget. Hi, Tony. How are you?
Hi, Karen. Thanks so much for having me today.
Sure. So my first question, when did this book launch?
Oh, my goodness. Today. Today is the day.
Today's the big day. Are you like crazy busy today?
Yes, I am so thrilled. As you mentioned, I am on a show here called Studio 40 Live once a month, and it was so appropriate for me to launch my book from that station because they have had me for 2 years now on a monthly basis. So I showed their readers and their viewers how to eat plant-based on a budget.
That's fantastic. So I want you to know that you're in a safe place here. We're totally behind what you're doing, and you can also talk as long as you like. I know that there are some programs where they limit what you're going to talk about, and we're not making anything today. My listeners can imagine some of the foods that we're talking about, but we're only audio and we're not visual. So
so you mean I can talk more than the 4 minutes that I had earlier today?
Exactly. So relax, take your time. You can hit all the points that you want to hit and say it all because we want to hear what you have to say.
Great. Well, thank you. I'm eager to dive in with you.
Okay. So in brief, your story. Now, your name is Japanese Akimoto, which I mispronounced earlier, but you're from a number of different origins. Is that correct?
Yes. So I have a Japanese last name. That is true. However, I was raised culturally Mexican because my grandfather was full Japanese and my grandmother was full Mexican. And because of that, my grandfather was disowned by his family. And so we didn't have a lot of ties to Japanese culture because, unfortunately, he wasn't really accepted anymore while I was growing up because of his choice to marry outside of the Japanese race. And so I grew up with my grandma's family, which is very, very culturally Mexican.
I'm sorry about your grandfather. There's a lot of that that humans have gone through ever since we first stepped on this planet, I think. I want to think that we're improving. I don't know if we are. And I imagine with World War II, was he living in California?
Yes.
Yeah, because there was that horrible internment of the Japanese, and we were very suspicious.
I actually have photos of him living in an internment camp with his family.
Yeah, that's a very bad little glitch. This country has a lot of bad little blips of things that we've done, and that's one of them. And I'm sorry about that. I know other people who were affected as well. So I see the heavy influence of Mexican cuisine in your cooking, and that's great because it's so easy to make delicious plant-based food with beans and grains and guacamole. That's like my favorite go-to thing.
That is. So I super duper love avocados. On Instagram, I regularly post avocados, and actually my husband proposed to me in an avocado. So he cut the avocado in half, stuck the ring in the pit, and then closed the avocado. And when we were at the farmer's market, he opened up the avocado and proposed, and it was making the best fruit even greater.
Oh, that's very sweet. You just got married in April, right?
Yep. I just got married. Thank you. It's been a whirlwind of a time with my new book and with my new marriage, and I'm having a lot of fun in life right now. Life has its ups and downs, as everyone knows, and I'm grateful to be on an up this month.
Good. Well, we'll get to your book, Plant-Based on a Budget. It's a very important topic, but I'm just kind of curious about you. So you got married, and can you tell us what kind of food you served at the wedding?
Yes. Okay. So many of our friends are plant-based, but half of them, I'd say, are very unfamiliar with plant-based food, especially my family that was coming. They were skeptical, and we wanted to show them the best of the best. So we offered recipes from my cookbook to the caterer. We had a caterer that was mandatory with the venue that we chose. So going into it, I thought, oh gosh, they don't have very much experience doing vegan. I don't know how it's going to go, but they were so accommodating. So if anyone's getting married, don't worry. It can be done. And I provided them with recipes from my cookbook. And then also, they were used to purchasing through a distributor artisan cheeses and fancy meats. And so we asked them if they would purchase Miyoko's artisan cheese. And they did. So we served Miyoko's cheese. We had a carving station with a butcher with a big giant hat. And we had him cutting field roast en croute loaf. Which were awesome. And it was like the whole experience that nobody really missed the animal products. And in fact, we're so impressed. My family still raves about the vegan food that we served. We had an all vegan menu. A friend of mine who is not vegan learned how to make vegan cakes and created this gorgeous, gorgeous vanilla cake with orange citrus zest and raspberry filling. It was really beautiful. And my whole theme of my wedding was fruit. And so in my bouquet and in the boutonnieres and on the tables, instead of flowers, we did some flowers, but mostly fruit. Mm. And there were berries, blackberries. My husband had a blackberry in his boutonniere next to his flower. And then it was cool because afterward we had goodie bags and the guests were able to take the fruit displays home. So if there was anything that wasn't eaten during the brunch, guests could take home the fruit. And so it was better than wasting a lot of flowers.
I love that. My brother got married about 14, 15 years ago, I think, and it was a vegan wedding. And I was all raw at the time. I did this raw diet for 2 years, and he was like, I can't believe you're going to be raw, and I'm having an all-vegan wedding. But they had, because they had all this wonderful cooked vegan food, but the centerpieces were these beautiful bowls of blueberries, and I just went nuts eating the blueberries all day. It was fantastic.
That's so cool. And it's so pretty. You can really dress them up, and they're useful. People love eating them during the reception, and I really like that idea.
Okay, well, you did. Not only was it your day and you got to enjoy it, but you also helped educate a lot of people, the caterers and the people who, your guests. So that was a great thing.
I was glad that everyone had a good experience, because when people are skeptical about plant-based living, you want to show them that it's easy and flavorful and delicious, and that they won't even miss what they thought they'd be missing.
You know, it surprises me today in 2019 with all of the plant milks and the new plant cheeses that are coming out that are really wonderful. Not the plant cheeses that were around that were awful for a while, but the ones that are really good now. And all of the plant meats, there's just, and it's all over the world now. It's really hard to believe that there are many people who still hold on to this myth that eating this way is not or cannot be delicious. It just blows my mind.
Yeah.
But we persist, and we're going to persist today with a new cookbook called Plant-Based on a Budget. And let's talk about Plant-Based on a Budget. Why is that important to you?
Well, I started working on the website plantbasedonabudget.com about 7 years ago, and it started as a passion project. I mostly saw a problem and wanted to fix it. I've been an animal activist for my whole adult life, and the website, the blog itself, started as a form of activism. I kept on hearing people talking about how plant-based eating was so expensive, and as a college student at the time, I found that it wasn't expensive, and in fact, it was a lot cheaper than buying the processed meats that I was buying and the microwavable $3, $4 meals that I was buying for dinner. I could plan my week's worth of food using dried beans and grains and in-season produce and save so much money. So that's how Plant-Based on a Budget started. And from there, it just grew in resources. And so the book is important to me because it's really 7 years of work. I've been working on it full time, the book, about 2 years. So I pitched it and have been working on it for about 2 years. So I am so excited that it is finally out in the world. And I'm really proud of how it turned out. It has colored photos with every recipe. There are about 100 recipes. And I did, having learned cooking, plant-based cooking, through cookbooks, because at the time when I became plant-based, there was not a lot of online resources. I really was able to take my experience and put it into the book. One of the best things I think that went into the book was a section for people to customize the recipes. And that's something that I did. If you look at my cookbooks from when I was learning how to cook, there's scribble all over the books because I didn't want to have to go buy all new ingredients. And so if I had kale instead of spinach, I would write, okay, this tastes good with kale. And I want people to have that experience too, so that they're not going out and buying a whole recipe's worth of ingredients, but also so that they can play with their food and decide what is best for them and their families.
We're all individuals. We're all different. And I think there are maybe three kinds of people when it comes to cooking. People who love to cook, people who hate to cook, and people who are kind of in the middle.
And, where are you?
Yeah, I love to cook.
Okay, you love to cook.
So those who love to cook aren't afraid and are comfortable with customizing and substituting and just being free. And I think the ones that don't like to cook, or at least don't have the skills, may have a fear, actually, a fear about being free with cooking. You know, so it's a good skill and a good tip to encourage customizing. We have lots of recipes on our nonprofit website, Responsible Eating and Living. And people ask all the time, can I do this? Can I do that? And you don't need to ask. You can just try it. But I think some people just don't feel free enough or skilled enough to know. And it takes practice, just like crawling, walking, and running takes practice. practice and moving and improving and at one before you move to the next. It's the same with cooking, but it's not that complicated.
Yes, and I try to encourage that with baby steps in my cookbook. So if I call for an onion, I say yellow, red, white onion, they'll all work. If I call for a bell pepper, I give them the option. I also say your favorite pasta noodles so that they can start with something small, like choosing their pasta noodles and not having to follow the elbow macaroni or the bow ties in the recipe.
I have so many cookbooks at home, primarily because I do this show and I get a lot of them. And I never cook from a cookbook, but sometimes when I want an idea, I might thumb through a cookbook or two. I get the idea, and then I'm off and running. I don't need the recipe. But that's taken decades. I was not always a good cook. I didn't know what to do. I made a lot of bad meals.
Same here.
Yeah. And so you got to practice. And then...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all.
And especially if you're cooking for multiple people. I know that I love to cook for people. And some people have allergies. Some people have really strong preferences. And so accommodating them and personalizing the recipe takes time and practice.
Okay. Are there some recipes in the book that were based on traditional family recipes that you had?
The Mexican rice is something that I've made. It's in a bowl, so it's a Mexican rice bowl in the book. I have made that and have eaten that maybe 100,000 times in my life. My grandma made it. My mom made it. I make it. And if that's the only recipe that calls for white rice. I've done brown rice and everything, but if people don't want white rice because it's unhealthy, then I also make it with quinoa instead. So that is an option. Mm. And that's actually something I tried to do. I have a very wide range of people who follow my recipes. Some people still eat fast food and still eat animal products and are looking to incorporate more plant-based dishes. And then some people don't eat salt, sugar, oil. And so I tried to give options for both audiences. And so the quinoa is something that I've swapped out in that Mexican rice. But definitely, I don't like it with brown rice, which I did say in there. I don't like it swapped with brown rice. The texture is funky. But with quinoa, it's still light and fluffy.
Okay. That's good advice. So back to the theme, plant-based on a budget, it is certainly less expensive to prepare plant foods than it is animal foods. And that's the real cost of food, not just the perceived cost of the food. So, I mean, for example, meats and cheese, animal-based foods are subsidized by the government. The plant foods that are grown to feed those animals, soy and corn, are subsidized by the government. Processed junk foods, which can be vegan but aren't really healthy, the sugar and the flours, are subsidized by the government. So we're not even seeing the real cost of meats and cheeses and junk foods. But even with that, cooking plant-based is less expensive.
Yes. Yep. And there are lots of ways you can save money, even in addition to the cheap prices at the grocery store, like starting a backyard garden, or if you have a porch, having a container garden, or even having some herbs on your windowsill. Those are all really good ways to make plant-based even cheaper. But you're so right that at the grocery store, when I go look at prices, which I do frequently, every time I'm traveling, I try to check out the grocery store. That's the biggest one in the neighborhood, and see what prices are. And I also scan, like a quiet scan of groceries to see what people are buying. And I know for sure that the meats are far more expensive than if I were to buy a tofu and make the same dish.
Right. And beans and rice, beans and grains.
Exactly.
I buy all organic. And still, I look for the good prices. I don't buy the beans and the grains that are super pricey. I buy the ones that are either on sale or on the low end. But I still buy organic, and it's still not as expensive, in my opinion.
Yep. Actually, Michelle, so before I wrote this book, I was meal planning, and that was the service that I had on my website, and I still do. It's their ebooks, basically, that teach people how to eat for a very, very, very small amount of money. And the goal is to shop for about $25 per week. So it's about $120 per meal. And when I was doing an experiment, my partner in the project, her name is Michelle Kane, she also has a website, it's called World of Vegan. She and I decided to do a video, like a companion video, showing how to shop at two extremes. So I shopped at Walmart in a small area in Maryland, and she shopped at Whole Foods buying only organic food. And we used the same meal plan, and I spent $20 and she only spent $38. So having a full organic from Whole Foods, everything that she wanted was only $38, which is a lot less than what people are normally shopping for. The people I have surveyed are spending about $50 to $60 if they're trying to budget, usually.
Mm. Okay. I just wanted to say a shout out to Michelle Sen. We've had her on this program. She's awesome. But I'm just wondering, I'm thinking people are going to look at your photo and they're going to say, you're tiny. Maybe you just don't eat enough.
Yeah, well, I have a very high metabolism and I do work out. And I also think that that's something that's a misconception about plant-based eating is that you can't work out if you're plant-based. I've run a full marathon. I've run a lot of half marathons. And I've been thriving on a plant-based diet. So it can definitely be done. But I know that people who are plant-based come in all shapes and sizes and are also thriving. So yes, have no fear. All body types can thrive on a plant-based diet.
Yes, well, we know that because there are numerous award-winning athletes today that are smashing records, and they're doing it with plants.
I love those stories too. I love finding out that the Olympians who win gold are on a plant-based diet. So cool.
Okay, I wanted to mention, how many recipes did I note? I noted two that I wanted to talk about that I like. The sweet potato breakfast bowl. I brought that up. What I liked about it is I'm more of a savory person than a sweet person when it comes to breakfast. And it's tough sometimes because my partner, Gary, he's definitely a sweet boy when it comes to breakfast. but I really love the savory, hearty foods in breakfast. So a sweet potato breakfast bowl really, really speaks to me. And sweet potatoes just in everything. It's been a very sweet potato year for me.
Well, they're good and they're so easy to work with. You can roast them. You can throw them in the Instant Pot. You can microwave them. You can slice them up and saute them. They're so versatile.
The other one that I thought was very creative, which I'm going to have to try. Now, everybody that isn't vegan says, I can't give up my cheese. And then we have all these great recipes to make plant-based cheeses and cheese sauces and nacho cheese. And I make a traditional one. I quote, I'm going to put quotes around traditional because it's not that very traditional, but it's been going on for a while. Cashews with miso and nutritional yeast, and you blend that up with water, and it's amazing. but your nacho cheese sauce is different.
Yes. So I use potatoes and carrots as the base. And get this, Karen, I had about 40 recipe testers, most of whom eat dairy and animal products still, and were at all different cooking levels. And two of the recipe testers, I had three people testing each recipe. Two of the people who tested that particular recipe ate regular nacho cheese still. And I mean, regular meaning dairy based, and loved this nacho cheese, said that they'll never go back to eating what they were eating before if this is what is available to them. So I was very excited to hear it. It's really easy to make and also omnivore approved.
That's awesome. Well, it's not surprising to me, but people don't realize many people who are on the standard American diet today are eating industrial processed foods that are filled with oil, salt, and sugar, air quotes again, natural flavors, which if you know anything about natural flavors, they're far from natural. And people are eating foods that aren't made from real ingredients. They're synthetic, manufactured, and you can taste that. And then when you switch over just to making a recipe with real foods, you can taste that. It's so different. It's so much better. So I'm imagining like a Velveeta or some highly processed, disgusting, dairy-based industrial cheese used for nachos, nacho cheese sauce, and then comparing it with anything that's been made from scratch from home. How could it compare? It can't.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I also think that cooking from scratch, so earlier you said that there were several types of people. I fall in somewhere in the middle camp where I really love to eat food. I love it so much. I love fresh food. I love home-cooked meals. And the cooking is part of, it's like the means to an end. It's kind of the path I need to take to get what I actually want, which is the home-cooked meal. And so I don't know how much I love it, which is probably why I've spent so much time trying to lessen the time in the kitchen in my cookbook. But it's the home-cooked meals that I really love. And having my own nacho cheese sauce, I would say, having grown up on a standard American diet, I did like that chemical cheese sauce. But I will say this is much better. And a big part of it is because of my relationship to the food now. I know it. I made it. And it makes the whole experience much better.
And of course, making food at home is less expensive than when you buy prepared processed foods.
Definitely. Definitely. I would say primarily I live off of beans. I do weekly pots of beans in the pressure cooker. If people don't have a pressure cooker, it is really a life-changing tool. Do you have one, Karen?
You know what? I don't.
Okay.
I know so many people are obsessed with their Instant Pots, and I haven't gone there. I don't mind cooking traditionally on a stove.
Yes, I am one of those people who just became obsessed. I got it. It took me a while to feel comfortable using it, but as soon as I learned how and figured out the right times for all the staples that I usually do, so pinto beans, quinoa, brown rice, those are things I always have made in my house, it really changed my life. I cook so much. There's always homemade food in my refrigerator that is ready to be whipped into something else. So for example, on my day off, I would make a pot of brown rice, a pot of quinoa, and then throughout the week, I'll use those as a base for a tofu stir fry or a chickpea curry or something like that. So, yes, I love my Instant Pot. I use it multiple times a day. I'm not even joking.
We don't want to joke here. I just wanted to mention you have a very nice forward from our very favorite medical doctor, Michael Greger, who's, I understand, has a new book coming out, How Not to Diet.
Which is so funny. That is such the most clever name.
Exactly. Well, I guess he's doing the How Not To series. How Not to Die and How Not to Diet. So there's the How To series, and Dr. Greger has the How Not To series. But very clever. He's a clever guy. He's a wonderful guy. We all love him. And how lovely for you to have a foreword in your book.
Yes, Dr. Greger has been really inspiring to me, as he has to many other people. And I was so over the moon that he agreed to be the foreword to my book. And I also have a T. Colin Campbell quote on the cover, which was also an honor for me.
Yep, he is just an amazing, amazing man, and just a great spokesperson, or I want to say poster boy. He's a great poster guy, poster person for eating this way, because he's in his 80s, he's vibrant, he's slim, he's handsome.
Check, check, check.
And he's very, very smart.
Yep.
Yes. Well, Tony, anything else you want to tell us about Plant-Based on a Budget?
I am just, again, over the moon about my new book. It can be found at Barnes & Noble and on Amazon. And I heard that it'll even be in some Costco's and Whole Foods. So check out your local store to find it. And I'm also at Plant-Based on a Budget on Instagram, where I'm super active there.
Okay, and before we go, I just want you to tell us who took all the wonderful photos in the book, because that's a big feature.
Okay, so I had two photographers. One of them is Michelle Kane, who is my partner in a lot of my projects. We actually will have another book coming out next year, she and I. So Michelle from World of Vegan, she took all of the lifestyle photos. So if I'm in the photo, she took it. And then my food photographer was Jenny Love. She is based out of San Francisco and is a super talented, phenomenal artist.
Very good. I think it's important to mention those people, because it's not easy to make beautiful food photos, although many of us try.
I totally agree. My poor Instagram. I sometimes have people saying, you should probably turn on the light more, or you should probably drizzle something on that, because it's so hard to make your food look good, especially if you didn't food style it. And so the food styling is the really hard part.
It is. And I'll make some gorgeous dishes that look beautiful on the table, but they just don't read right through a lens.
I have had that same experience, Karen.
So that's the art. Okay, one last question before I let you go. Who in your family has the great smile that you got?
Oh, I look just like my dad. One time I was walking down the street and this guy was like, hey, hey. And I thought, oh gosh, I'm going to ignore him. And then he said, are you George's daughter? And I said, that's an awkward pickup line. And he said, you look just like him. How identical you are. And I immediately called my dad and had him on the speaker. And it was his coworker who doesn't work with him directly. He doesn't work with him directly all the time, but he works with him enough to see him in my face.
That's sweet. Well, you have a great smile, and it shines and glows, and I don't see how anybody wouldn't want to eat plant-based after seeing how good you look.
Thank you so much. And thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining me today, Tony Akomoto.
Okamoto.
Oka. Wait a minute.
Long O's.
Right. I. What happened is I wrote it wrong on my website, and I have to correct it. But I'm reading it from your book, Tony Akimoto. And thank you for joining me today and writing Plant-Based on a Budget. Good luck today on your launch date.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Be well. Okay. That was Tony Akimoto. I'm saying it again and saying it correctly. Very good. Well, I have not done a live show in a couple of weeks. Has it been 2 weeks or 3 weeks? I skipped two shows. And primarily it's because the Progressive Radio Network studio has been moving. And I also took the opportunity to take some time off because I've been busy doing other things. So one of the things I was doing was participating in the Food Revolution Network 2019 Summit. Have you participated in any of the Food Revolution Network summits, and did you listen to the one this year? It's really a time commitment, and I'm fortunate to work with the Food Revolution Network, and that enables me to make the time to listen to all of the interviews. And what I was doing during the 9 days is answering people's questions on the broadcast page as the interviews were playing. I find it really a fun opportunity, and it's really an interesting option. It's an interesting way to find out what people are thinking about and what their concerns are. So there weren't as many questions this time about protein. Where do you get your protein? There were more questions about autoimmune diseases, and I think that represents a lot of what's going on today with more people afflicted by autoimmune diseases. And we're learning more and more about the causes and how to heal it. And it's not always the same for everyone. The symptoms are different. There are lots of webinars out there now that are talking about autoimmune diseases and healing. And unfortunately, some of the things that they recommend are good and some are not so good. And it's kind of hard to discern, I know. So I wanted to talk about some of the highlights that I got out of the Food Revolution Network. The number one thing for me was Dr. Joel Fuhrman talking about working with very young children with type 1 diabetes. And he was able to bring the disease into remission. And we have never heard that with type 1 diabetes. So not everyone, but many people know today that most type 2 diabetes can be reversed with diet and lifestyle. And that's not the same with type 1. So this is powerful news, profound news. You can read about it. There's an article by Dr. Fuhrman in the very new International Journal of Disease Reversal and Prevention. I mentioned this new journal in one of my last programs. You can go to the website ijdrp.org. Those are the initials for International Journal Disease Reversal Prevention, IJDRP. And Dr. Fuhrman has an article there, Treatment and Remission of Symptoms in Type 1 Diabetes with a Nutrient-Dense Plant-Rich Diet Case Studies. This is just such exciting news. The other thing I wanted to talk about is this global celery juice movement. Have you heard about that? And have you participated in it? It's kind of blowing me away. So Anthony Williams, medical medium, has been promoting the benefits of drinking 16 ounces of celery juice. And he claims that many people have jumped on the bandwagon and are drinking 16 ounces of celery juice every day and have had wonderful recoveries and improvements in their health. And if that's true, that's great. I am kind of concerned. Number one, I've noticed in supermarkets in Northern California and in New York City, and I've heard from people in Florida and some other states, that the organic celery is cleared off the shelf. Everybody's buying celery now and making celery juice. Now, I hope that the farmers can ultimately respond and grow more celery. But I'm kind of concerned about it. Of course, I want everyone to feel better. Celery is a great food. It has electrolytes, sodium, potassium, and it has a lot of water. It's easy to juice. I always include celery when I'm making my green juice because it dilutes the green juice and it just makes it a better tasting drink. And I know I'm getting those electrolytes. But the concern is 16 ounces too much? And I know that Dr. Furman has pointed out that one cup of celery juice has about 220 milligrams of sodium, so one cup is okay, but two cups, 440 milligrams of sodium, if we're trying to keep our sodium at like 1,500 milligrams and we get just about a third or a quarter of the sodium from one drink, that could be a lot. Certainly, two cups wouldn't be that terrible, but then if you're going to go for four cups or five cups, that's like, whoa, that's sodium city. Anyway, I'm curious who's tried celery juice and what your thoughts are, because I could learn more about it. Let me know if you're into the celery juice movement. Send me an email at info@realmeals.org. So the Food Revolution Network, when I was listening to all the celery juice, it just got me into wanting to juice. And you may know I'm a big proponent of green juicing, and my juice just typically consists of kale, collards, celery, carrots, lemon. Sometimes I add ginger. Sometimes, depending on what I have around, I might add a broccoli stalk, cucumber if it's around. But my foundation is pretty much celery, carrots, lemon, sometimes ginger, and lots of dark leafy greens. And I love it. And I make a week's worth, and I freeze individual portions, and then I take out a juice every day. And I had taken a break after 10 years of juicing and stopped juicing, and now I'm back, and I'm very happy with it. So a week ago, I decided I'm going to try just something for fun. And I juiced a 5-pound bag of carrots, and I made pure carrot juice, and I put that in a jar. I juiced two bunches of celery, and I put that in a jar. And then I juiced a couple of lemons with the rind. I use organic, so I'm comfortable with the rind of the lemon, and that's where all the flavonoids are, so I like the rind. And then I juiced a big pile of ginger. And I made these different juices. And then the next few days, I really loved. Oh, and I juiced some apples too. And I'm not a big promoter of juicing fruit because fruit's best with the fiber. But I have to tell you, juiced apples, fresh apples, it's just really yummy. But I really had fun having my bar, let's say, of fresh vegetable juices. It was like I could make a cocktail of whatever I wanted, a little carrot juice, a little lemon and ginger when I wanted. So the first thing I did was I tried plain celery juice. I'm like, okay, let's just see what this is all about. I had a glass. It wasn't even 8 ounces. Frankly, it was too salty for me. I don't eat salt. I don't eat sodium salt. And I get my salt, my sodium, my minerals from food. And for me, it was too salty. So when I wanted to drink the rest of the celery juice, I mixed it. I mixed it with lemon and ginger, and I was very happy with that. Now, Anthony Williams tells us we should drink it straight. And if it works for you, great. We haven't really seen anything to support the benefit of just celery other than these anecdotes that are shared. I'm very comfortable with mixing celery with other colorful vegetables because my particular digestive system is smart and can handle digesting more than one vegetable at a time. It knows what to do, and I just leave it up to my digestive system. I don't know what it's doing, but I know it can do it. And I want to get those dark leafy green vegetables, and I find that they go very nicely with celery juice, and a little carrot juice sweetens up the mix a bit. If you want, you can add a little bit of beet too, and that'll give you your anthocyanins in addition to your sulforaphanes. All of those are very good to boost the immune system and fight cancer and all of that. So that's my thoughts on celery juice. And again, if you found some benefit, I'd love to hear about it. Next up, I want to talk about hospitals. So I have a neighbor who's 92, and she fell, and she was brought to the hospital. And that's something that plagues many elderly people. They fall when it's not expected because their legs are weak, and they're hospitalized, and then often they go to rehabilitation, and hopefully they work things out and they come home. I was visiting her in the hospital, and she was being served her lunch. And it was salmon, it looked like a cake of salmon and some mashed potatoes and some squash. It wasn't terrible. But I just kept looking at that salmon, and my brain was going at it like, you could make that. You could make that. And in the end, a couple of days later, I came home. Well, I went home right away, but a couple of days later, I made what my brain was telling me to make, and I'm so excited about it. I made a dish with cooked red lentils, and there's only 4 ingredients in this recipe: lentils, hemp seeds, seasoning. I used Old Bay seasoning, and sheets of nori, the seaweed that you wrap sushi with. And it's a very simple, easy to make recipe. And I made this batter, let's say, of red lentils that were seasoned, and I pressed it into some individual baking dishes and baked it. And it's just amazing. It just tastes so delicious. I'm not saying it tastes like salmon, but it has kind of a fishy feeling because of the Old Bay seasoning, which is often used to season fish. And the nori gives a very mild sea flavoring. But the thing that I was really thrilled about were the hemp seeds. Have you ever used hemp seeds? Now, it's crazy in this country, the United States, where we're not allowed to grow hemp yet because it's related to marijuana. But the hemp plant is amazing and so useful, and we really should be growing it in this country, and then the price of hemp seeds would go down because hemp seeds are rather pricey in this country. But hemp seeds are rich in omega-3 fatty acids, just like salmon is supposed to be. So I thought I'll add some hemp to my vegan salmon cake to give it a little omega-3 boost. And it gave it such a rich, creamy flavor that I'm so thrilled with this recipe. You can get it at responsibleeatingandliving.com because I am happy to share these discoveries, these inventions with anyone who is interested. It gives me great joy to do that. That's my gift for you today: baked red lentil salmon cakes. Now, while we're talking about hospital foods, I want to mention, because we were talking about plant-based on a budget, what many hospitals don't realize is that vegetarian food and vegan food costs about 50% less than meat foods, and hospitals can save a lot of money by serving more meat-free meals. The St. Joseph Health System in Sonoma County reported this, and I know that it's true all over. And yet, for many people who end up in hospitals, it's very frustrating when they want to eat healthfully. And what kind of crazy thing is it? You go into a hospital to get well, and yet you're fed junk. you're fed food that's going to contribute to your disease. Yes, so the point is that hospitals could save money by offering healthier food. It's what a concept. Now, this is happening in a number of places. I'm thrilled that here in the greatest city in the world, New York City, specifically in Brooklyn, thanks to President Eric Adams, who is Brooklyn Borough President Eric Adams, there's this new program that was started, I think it started last year, where at the Bellevue Hospital, there's a plant-based lifestyle medicine program that offers patients with chronic diseases support services to transition to and stick with eating vegetarian. And the public health system has invested $400,000 for the pilot program, and I hope that they add a lot more because the response has been amazing. So many people want to participate in this program. And then, of course, in California, they voted in a law that requires licensed California healthcare facilities and state prisons to make available plant-based meal options containing no animal products or bioproducts, including meat, poultry, fish, dairy, or eggs. This is great news, and it can't happen soon enough. Now, even the American Medical Association, that conservative group that takes forever to get on board with the best nutrition information, they encourage healthy food options to be available in hospitals, and that includes plant-based meals, meals that are low in fat, sodium, and added sugar, and eliminating processed meats from the menus and providing and promoting healthy beverages. Now, what they consider healthy beverages, that's another story because I don't know how they feel about Ensure, I know how I feel about it. It's a beverage and it's not healthy. It's made with dairy and sugar and lots of synthetic vitamins and oil. Yum. Not so much. I was in California a few weeks ago, and I always hit the same restaurants when I go out, but I discovered a new place. I think it's a chain. I don't know how widespread they are, but maybe you've heard of them. They've kind of inspired me to make something new at home, but I haven't quite done it yet. It's called Vitality Bowls. Have you heard of Vitality Bowls? They have a really nice menu, but their focus is making bowls that have like a soft serve, like ice cream, but it's made from frozen berries. And depending on what you choose, you can have some spinach or frozen broccoli or something mixed in with your soft serve. But the berries and the other fruits sweeten it, so you don't really realize you're getting the vegetable in it. And that's the base of the bowl. And then on top, you can have toppings like granola and nuts and seeds and more fruits. And it was amazing. I had just done a really long walk, and it was hot. And this was filling and refreshing. It had flax seeds in it and goji berries and almond milk and just a wonderful collection of fruits. And I haven't quite done this before. I've made a soft serve and had it for dessert, but I never really enhanced it with all this other stuff to make a big filling meal. So I might try that. Have you tried that? Vitality Bowls. It's a great place to check out if you ever see one along the way in your path. I also wanted to mention, even the American College of Cardiology recognizes the importance of healthy food in hospitals, and that being in a hospital could be a teaching moment, a learning moment for people that end up there to learn about how to heal and eat better. So we have these rehab facilities which help people exercise and strengthen. But it can also be a place to teach people how to heal within with healthy food. So I'm looking forward to that in the future. And just something else I want to throw out before I go, because it's about time to wrap up this program. Remember I talked to Bilal Kizilbash, and we talked about his product, Easy Kale. I'm going to say again, I'm not invested in this project. I get nothing back from the sale or the success of this product, Easy Kale. But wouldn't it be great to have shakers of Easy Kale on all the tables in hospital cafeterias? I think so. So if you're affiliated in any way with a hospital cafeteria, you might recommend getting Easy Kale because it's an easy way for people to get nutrition. Okay, you've been listening to It's All About Food, my friends. Thanks for joining me today. I am Karen Hartglass. You can find me at info@realmeals.org if you have any comments or questions to share. And please visit my website where you'll find my blog, What Vegans Eat, now with, over 1,500 posts, and there's always new recipes. Have a delicious week, everybody.